We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Welcome to the Sooner Sports Podcast, presented by Riverwind and Allstate. Now, here's your host, Chris Plank.
Well, let's get after it on a Tuesday on the Sooner Sports Podcast. Coming up first thing tomorrow morning, Toby Rowland and I will preview the Big 12 baseball tournament. Actually, we'll have a game to recap as well from later tonight. But today we focus on softball. Aaron Miller joins us, and we'll talk in depth about the Sooners advancing to the Super Regionals. Plus, we'll have another conversation with Ryan Hibble after the Oklahoma Sooners have advanced to the national championship in golf. In fact, it's not just head coach Ryan Hibble, who's joining us on this edition of the Sooner Sports Podcast, because in addition to Coach Hibble, we'll be joined by Sooner assistant coach Bill Alcorn as we go in-depth on the Sooners rally in Albuquerque and their preparation for the national championship. But first, let's talk some softball. Aaron Miller joins us on this episode of the Sooner Sports Podcast. Well, first and foremost, we've got OU games to recap, but Aaron, you tweeted it. Parity was on display this week, and how exciting was it to see some of the if necessary games and just some overall great softball this weekend?
Oh my gosh. I mean, I anticipated the landscape being wild and there being some crazy back against the wall softball, but I did not expect this much craziness. The parity is across the sport. And to me, that means there's growth. When you've got mid-major schools that are upsetting, you know, top 16 seeds, this to me means that our sport is elevating and you just got to celebrate it.
With that in mind, is the biggest surprise what we saw? I mean, look, James Madison has an absolute stud in the circle. So I don't think that's too shocking for those who have been following it all season long, but what was the biggest surprise to you this weekend?
Well, so I did get to cover the Tennessee Regional. I got to see Odyssey Alexander on display. So I got to witness that firsthand. She is the real deal, Chris Plank. Like, I'm telling you, very impressive in the circle.
Beyond just how impressive she is in the circle, you not only saw an upset, but you saw, I mean, listen, it was a 2-3. But still, whenever Tennessee isn't involved in the finals of their own regional, I mean, Aaron, what does that say to you? That says that they were Liberty and James Madison were pretty amazing this year.
Well, and you've gotten to see Liberty early this year, taking Oklahoma twice. We got to cover that game. Liberty's always been a good team. To me, they've always been a dark horse that's underrepresented. I think James Madison is the same way. You know, that's a team that has been in the postseason, I think, I want to say the past 5 years. I mean, this is not a shock. I just don't think they're getting the recognition and the stage that they deserve. James Madison clearly made a statement against Tennessee. They packed their best punch. Odyssey Alexander, that first 10-inning game against Liberty, had a career record and a program record of 19 strikeouts in 10 innings. So she, I mean, looking at what she brings to the circle, you're going to see a very, very tough play against number 8 seed Missouri. She was topping out at around 71 miles an hour with a low 50 changeup and drop ball. So her disparity in speed, the range of her repertoire in the circle was very impressive.
Aaron, this is an exciting weekend, right? Because we're back in the booth. I mean, you get an opportunity now to be on site. I would assume outside of being a fan at a couple of games, and then what, we got a chance to do a few games at USA Softball Hall of Fame Stadium and at Marietta Hines Field. Just on a pure personal level, how excited are you to be back in a booth this week and on site? And where are you, in Stillwater?
I'm in Stillwater, so I'm about 50 miles up the road from my house. I had a conversation with a couple of teammates just about how, and colleagues, about how excited I am, even if I can't be in close proximity with coaches and players, the sights, the sounds, the smells, just the ambiance and the feel of being in a stadium and not at limited capacity.
Right.
This is going to be 100% capacity. It's going to be electric. It's postseason play. The nostalgia, I think, is just going to hit me right in the heartstrings when I get in that stadium.
I won't lie to you. It hit me pretty hard on Friday. You know, we've had some good crowds, Aaron, this year. But when Sweet Caroline is played after the fifth inning, or I guess we had to do it in the fourth inning because of where the game was on Friday night, and that was the first time that they had a chance to do it all season long, and you heard everyone singing along when that Sooner team comes out of the dugout and Boomer, and it's Sooner. It's not just this one small section, it's the whole stadium. I mean, listen, I'm not just saying this because softball was in the regionals, but watching the NBA and seeing what Trae Young did and looking at baseball, this felt like almost a real sports weekend. Like, I don't want to tear down the goalposts at halftime, but an almost we're back.
Yeah. Well, you know how special Sweet Caroline is to me. That was my rally cry that would pull me out of the dugout to dance with our fans. So I definitely can relate to your sentiment. I think that the sports world, the fan base is just ready for normalcy to be back. And what better time than in postseason for a heck of a postseason run, potentially for the Sooners.
You and I are going to have a show on Friday where we go through all of the Elite Eight, I keep saying Elite Eight, super regional games of the 16 teams that are left, and then we'll get down to 8 for the Women's College World Series. So we'll go in-depth on every single super regional in sight and in-depth on the game that you're covering. Obviously, a lot of Sooner eyes will be on Oklahoma State and Texas. But I know you follow from afar. You were keeping close tabs. You had a couple rain delays, so maybe able to watch more than you typically could. But what'd you make of Oklahoma's performance in the Norman Regional this weekend?
Oh, man. I knew there was a lot of fight in that squad. And even when teams would get up early, you know, 4-run deficit at times, there was never surrender. There was never worry. There was never a shift in energy other than go. Go, 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 you know, pedal to the metal, apply pressure. A 4-run deficit didn't even affect that team at any point. And to me, you know, where there are weaknesses within this squad, we've seen a little bit of adversity with pitching, of just being able to hammer that strike zone, being able to get key outs when it matters. I thought the good Wichita State team, the Shockers, what they put up against OU was vital in preparation as we enter into super regionals. Now, I agree with Coach Gass's sentiment. They shouldn't have been sent to Norman. That team's way too good to be facing the number one seed. I mean, you saw they've got potentially triple digit home runs, and their power numbers were good enough to get them somewhere else instead of coming through Norman. And Coach Gasso has reflected that disappointment and given them mad props. They're a very good mid-major team. Coach Breadwinner there is top tier. And what we saw between them and Oklahoma, one, it displays the growth of our sport and that mid-major talent is taking huge strides. But two, it showed some weaknesses within the Sooners. You know, too many pitches left over the heart of the strike zone. And I think that in that way, it shows that, yes, our offense, OU's offense, can come back from pretty much any deficit, but is that sentiment going to ring true against some elite pitching? You know, as they face Washington, as they face Gabby Plain, one of the best arms in the nation, in the final three for National Player of the Year, will our offense be able to rescue potentially a tough situation that our pitchers face? That is what I'm most eager to see this weekend, is what our pitching staff, what Oklahoma pitchers can do in very pressure-filled moments.
Yeah, and you mentioned Gabby Plain, finalist, as you brought up, for Player of the Year with Jossie and Rachel Garcia. And again, I feel like she's been around so long, but that drop ball. Aaron, can you just take us through the challenges when you see something that looks so perfect and it just falls off the table as effectively as Gabby Plain's drop ball does?
Well, you know, in my eyes, the drop ball was always the hardest to hit. It's the hardest to elevate. It's the hardest to hit well without pounding it into the ground. And then for Gabby Plain, I think what makes her so good is obviously the spin on that drop ball, but it's heavy as heck, Chris Plank. It is a thud when it hits the bat. It's the RPMs, those rotations that make that ball so freaking heavy. I mean, it will rattle your hands if you do not hit it square. And I'll be honest, I think of the offense of Oklahoma and the way that in my years past, I know things have changed over the evolution of JT Gasso stepping in as the hitting coach, but to generate backspin, the plane of attack doesn't always match up with a drop ball. So this is going to be a true challenge to adjustments at the plate, I think, with an elite pitcher, Gabby Plain, focusing on lower in the zone. Oklahoma is going to have to adjust and have a game plan to face that movement.
Two more quick ones, and we'll let you get out of here, Aaron. First one, I love the strategy on Sunday that Coach Gasso implemented. Mm-hmm. I know there was a lot of questions about why Olivia Raines, and even afterwards she said maybe a little bit unfair to put Liv in that situation when she hadn't started a game this season. But to me, it spoke to the analytics and the strategy behind, you know, having arms and having the numbers that they have now. And they looked at two pitchers whose I guess you could say their balls seemed like they matched pretty well with Wichita State's swing plane. Didn't work out so well for him, but it just showed you that confidence they have in not being afraid to take a gamble this late in the season.
Yeah, and let's be honest here, Chris. We can sit around and talk around a table or get our Twitter thumbs in a frenzy about the decisions being made, but at the end of the day, no one knows their team better than Coach Gasso.
That's right.
Right? Knows their pitching staff better than Jen Rocha. So for us to analyze and try and break down the decisions and why you know, who's getting the starting ball. Listen, from a public eye, guys, as you're witnessing decisions being made, there is so much happening behind the scenes, day in, day out at practice, private conversations, one-on-one battles, challenges, mental challenges. There are so many things that factor into those decisions that we know nothing about. And I would consider myself pretty in the know. You know,
yeah.
I'm on a daily, you know, call with coaches all over the nation. I feel like I stay in touch with Coach Gasso pretty much every week. I consider myself in the know, and there's still things that I still will never see, because that is the bubble. That's the nature of our sport, is there are daily challenges and growth and things that these coaches witness that we'll never be privy to. So we've just got to trust that Coach Gasso and Jen Rocha know their players. They know what's going to put their team in a position to win. And ultimately, in the mind's eye of growth and thinking of Olivia Raines, that moment was probably pivotal to the growth of her career for seasons to come. Sometimes you've got to have a little faith to put the ball in the hands of a young pitcher and go, listen, figure it out. This is a big time game, and you'll never be ready for this moment if we don't just put you in it. And so I think,
Great point. I didn't want to cut you off by any stretch of the imagination, Aaron, but it reminded me a lot of, you know, 2017, Mendez got a start, Nicole Mendez late in the series. I'm like, oh my, I think even in the championship series, she started a game in the circle. And I thought about 16, that second game, you know, whenever Coach Gasso, after you guys had won the first game, and she decided to go with Kelsey Stevens in that second game, you hit it on the head. We can get all riled up with our Twitter fingers and try to act all in the know, but bottom line here, this is Coach Gasso, and there are layers and levels of plans and strategy that go behind a call like that.
Oh, completely. And nobody knows what's best than her. And I can remember, you know, just the classic saying of iron sharpens iron. There are battles happening every day, guys. I mean, you are probably closer to it than even I now, Chris, being, you know, in close proximity to that team, seeing practices, like there's fights. I think of like Lindsey Elam and Kinzie Hansen fighting for that starting role. Now, keep in mind, it's all in good nature. I think that there is no bad culture or bad blood, but the fact that you have a double-digit home run hitter and Elam, who absolutely went off last weekend, battling for that starting role behind the plate. Like, these are the type of things that we don't necessarily see on a day-to-day basis. We only see during 7 innings. Well, heck, mostly 5 innings this year for the Sooner squad. But, you know, that's what a good problem to have, to struggle to figure out who you're going to put in that starting nine. What a brilliant problem to have. Most coaches do not have that dilemma facing them every day.
Aaron Miller's postseason breakdown of the Sooners in college softball brought to you by Communication Federal Credit Union. Voted number one, ranked number one by Forbes magazine as the number one credit union in Oklahoma. Aaron, we'll go in depth on Friday. We'll get back on that Zoom and roll through the entire Super Regional. Can't wait for it. Have a great week and pumped that you're back on site.
Awesome. Me too. Can't wait to chat with you.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Awesome stuff from Aaron. Friday at 2 o'clock, Saturday at 2 o'clock, and the if necessary game Sunday at 3 o'clock against Washington. All right, Meg McDonald had a chance to talk about the OU men's golf team with two of the most important pieces, Ryan Hibble and Bill Alcorn.
Coach Hibble, I'll start with you. Just generically, how would you describe the week at regionals?
It was a tough week, you know, and I know everybody back home's watching through Golfstat. It's just a better reason for us to keep getting college golf on television, like the national championship will be, because it's such a great sport to watch, and coming down the stretch, high impact, intensity, all over the place. And you know, our guys did a great job coming down the stretch. But at the start of the week, you know, we didn't get off to a great start. First round, we really didn't take care of business on the easier holes. You know, there was quite a bit of birdies in Albuquerque on certain holes, and we just didn't do a good enough job in those areas, and that hurt us on Monday and Tuesday. And you know, the conversations from Monday to Tuesday changed. You know, Monday it's more about, hey, we're okay, you know, everything's going to be fine as long as we kind of XYZ do this and this. Tuesday night type of conversation is significantly different. You know, backs are against the wall, and we gotta go make something happen. And that's what our guys did. They really rose to the occasion on Wednesday, and it was an interesting week, though. You know, van rides were pretty somber, going back and forth to getting food. Not very much talking going on. You know, because they can feel the intensity, and call it what it is. It's expectations. When everybody expects you to be playing well, our guys believe that they're the best. They believe that they're supposed to be playing better. You know, it's tough when the target's on your back and you're not performing at that level. So just really proud of how they finished and handled, you know, obviously on Wednesday and getting us through there.
So, Bill, we talked a little bit about this off camera, but I find it so interesting who you walk with, what you say to some of these athletes. So take us through it. Who do you walk with? And then Ryan will follow up with who you walk with.
Yeah, so this really each week is different in how they're lined up in the lineup as well. But you know, day one, I went out with Vinny. He was the first out, so I wanted to go with him. And then I kind of relay information to Coach Hibble, and we work kind of as a team with me out in front. Sometimes he's out in front, depending on who's in that spot. And then the second day, I was with Ben Lorenz, and was with him throughout, which he did a great job as a freshman when we threw him in there. I mean, he did a fantastic job that final round. But I was with him that second day, and then again with him on the final day. At one point, I jumped back to Logan to try to get him stirred up and get some mo going with him. He had just kind of a tough round that final round, but did a good job those first 2 days for us. And then down the stretch, I was with Ben Lorenz kind of on the last six holes, and then fell back on 18 with each player until Hibble was with JB coming up in the last group.
And so what's your plan of attack with your guys?
Well, like Bill said, I mean, every week is significantly different. It all is really based on the golf course and also how we're feeling with each guy. But I've been walking with John quite a bit, especially towards the end of the springtime. We work well together, and sometimes when you have that rapport, you end up sticking with it. And I started walking with him in the first round, and he just played great all week long, so it's kind of hard to want to disturb that. You know, you bounce around when moments are there, you know, depending on if holes are running parallel. And, hey, we still would like this ball in a certain spot versus another spot, or, hey, you know, we're going to be a super aggressive here. Those are the conversations that we're having. But, you know, final round, because I know that's what everybody's wanting to hear about. I mean, you know, Bill's texted me. We got our freshman, Ben Lorenz, doing a great job. And he makes a 20-footer on the 18th hole for birdie. And he sends me a big boom text, you know. And then right behind him is Quade, who finishes it off with a great birdie. And I get another one, you know, big boom. And then Garrett Reban's coming in. And I get another text message. And I'm on 17 at this time with Big John. And at that point, we had gotten above Texas A&M, which on the board, that's what we needed to do to make sure we stayed at 12 under or better. And John did a great job. He hit a phenomenal drive, a little wedge in there, about 12 feet. And 18 is not a very difficult par 5, as long as you get off the tee box in a good spot. And so I started feeling pretty good on 17, and sure enough, John 3-putts it. So we give up a shot.
Wasn't he on in 2?
Well, no, I'm sorry. This is 17 par 4.
Oh, okay. I gotcha.
So he 3-putts, and then all of a sudden, you know, things change. That's how fast college golf changes. But you know, to his credit, he stepped up on 18 and absolutely dropped a bomb on this par 5, and that's what we needed. We needed him to be in play to where we could go for the green in 2, which he did. He put it in the middle of the green with a 7-iron. I mean, you know, he had a nice drive and was able to 2-putt that and walk away with a birdie. But, you know, again, the tensions are high. I mean, you know, his heart's racing, my heart's racing. But we're trying to be as calm as we possibly can for our guys. They don't need to feel that energy. They just need to understand that, you know, we're doing everything we can to put ourselves in a great spot. But college golf can quickly turn, you know, when you've got – essentially 4 guys. You got 5 guys going, but you're counting 4 scores. So a lot of things can happen, you know, for the good and obviously for the worse, you know, depending on the situation. But for this moment, it was fantastic because we had 4 birdies on the last hole, which was the tidal wave that we needed.
So no leaderboards on this course, and you guys communicate via text, via boom. Is that what we're getting here?
Yeah, for the most part.
So how aware are you two about the scores, especially heading into the clubhouse down the stretch?
I think we do a little differently, both of us. I don't like to look at anything until it gets to the point where, all right, do I need to move on to another player, or who do I need to help, and where does that need to be? I feel like I do a better job if I'm just with the guy and trying to figure out how do I maximize maximize what he can do that day. And so I know he looks a little bit more often than I do, but you know, coming down the stretch, I absolutely look and I feel like when I was playing, knowing that got me more excited, and so I think even coaching coming down the stretch, I like feeling where we're at and what we want to do and what we need to do. And some guys on our team want to know where we're at. Some guys don't want to know where we're at. So it's just kind of, you know, I look because sometimes they want to know. And I think there's some guys that can really help and get them excited about where they're at and what they need to do, and other guys it can kind of hurt. So you just have to know who you're with at the time and what information you need to feed them to get them going the right direction.
So who wants to know and who doesn't want to know? You want to know, Hibble.
Well, I mean, I want to know in the right moments. Yeah. I didn't really look, to be honest with you, until we got to about number 9 in the final round. So, you know, because early on, I mean, it is what it is. I mean, we got off to a really nice start. We got off to the perfect start on Wednesday that we needed to. Of those 4 guys that counted, we had 3 birdies and an eagle. And that's what we hadn't been doing earlier in the week, you know, really attacking the easier holes. Number 1 was a fairly easy par 5, and they did a great job there. So immediately we're already kind of heading in the right direction. Yeah, I mean, I'll look depending on the situation. But, again, I mean, I've learned over the years, I mean, you can't let what you see on a board dictate the information that you're really telling a guy, unless there's a moment, you know, maybe it's a drivable par 4, maybe it's an aggressive play on a par 5 or whatever the case may be, because we're still just trying to put our guys in the best spot possible. And it's not more about, hey, we're going to fire right at this flag. If that's the right play, then it's the right play. If it's not, then we're going to tell them where the ball needs to be regardless. So, yeah, but I mean, wouldn't you love to know how many golf stat hits that website gets on the final day at regionals? I would. Yeah. Because it's not just our regional, they're all over the country, and it's happening left and right at every regional championship. Mm-hmm. And I would say, you know, I'm biased, but I think we have arguably the hardest championship to win because of our qualifying process. You can play all year long, then you still go to regionals, and in our sport, a 50th ranked team can beat you just as quickly as anybody, and the parity is so strong. And so we get through regionals, and then all of a sudden we go to nationals, and you have 54 holes. There's a cut, then there's another 18 holes. There's a cut, and there's a match play. So it's a long, drawn out process, and the energy and stress of it all. We're trying to take all that in, and take it off of our guys, you know, because we just want them to just go play golf. But it's interesting, you know, because a guy like a Logan McAllister, high kind of stress guy, you know, and wants to kind of know what's going on and feel it all out and walking quickly to everything. And then you got a guy like a Patrick Welch who kind of just does his thing, walks around. I don't really know if he cares about where we are or what's going on. He just is going to keep doing what he does, you know. So every personality is significantly different, but that's our job, is to try and, you know, help them and put them in the right spots.
So I'll keep it here with you. I know hindsight is 20/20, obviously, but Ben Lorenz comes in, lineup change, shoots even par on the 2 rounds, mm-hmm. all things considered. Were you expecting him to do that well in a high-pressure situation where, all right, our backs are up against the wall and we need a freshman to deliver?
Yes. I mean, he's been traveling with us all spring long, and that's part of the program, you know, is whether or not you're in that starting 5, buying into when it's your opportunity, you have got to be ready and willing to step up. And we believed in his game. He's one of the best ball strikers on our golf team, has shown us all year long. And, you know, we decided to make the change after the first round. You know, Patrick's been struggling a little bit on the greens, and we just need a little bit of juice in there. And I just didn't want to make the change going into a final round for a young freshman. So the second round really helped set him up for the final round at the end of the day. I think he would tell you that, you know, he didn't even count for us in the second round. But had he not played, it would have been a way more difficult situation for him in that final round. He understood the golf course at that point. But he's got a big time game, great, great future in front of him. And we're expecting him to go. I mean, he's going back home in Arizona. Mm-hmm. You know, he's going to feel good. The air is going to feel good. The grass is going to feel right to him. And so we're expecting him to come. Forget about the fact that he's a freshman. I mean, this is the end of his freshman year. He's not a freshman anymore. And he's been with us kind of through the gauntlet all year long. So a lot of experience, even though it's young experience for him right now. And I think he's feeling great about what just happened.
Bill, we know a lot about this lineup as a whole. These guys are old. They're all like 7 feet tall. They hit it really far. I can say that I'm 5'2", so everyone's 7 feet tall. But what do we know about Ben? How would you describe Ben to Sooner Nation?
A really big-time ball striker, and he really is a good driver of the golf ball, too. I was really impressed because I was with him those 2 days. On the putting greens, he was hitting his lines really, really well. If we get him lined up where he needs to be lined up on the putting surface, he pretty much hits it where we want it. Now, his speed can be a little bit different here and there, but I also saw some things around the greens from him this week that I hadn't seen all year. And from we talk about him, he's not a freshman anymore. I mean, he's grown up, way different golfer than he was when he came in August. He's got a lot more craft around the greens. Still has a ways to go there, but he hit some shots that to save par and even for birdie. You know, like you said, no one saw any of the golf this week, but he made a great birdie putt on number nine. Not on number nine, make the turn to get the two under on the back nine, but he was 40 yards short-sighted in a bunker and hit an unbelievable bunker shot to 8 feet and then made the putt. I mean, those are big-time moments for a freshman, and he didn't have those types of shots back in August, but now he's really developed into a very nice all-around player.
Before we get to the very end of the third round, I do want to have you answer the same question. So two questions for both of you. What was the moment you thought, I don't think we're going to do it? And then what was the moment you were like, okay, we're good, we're going, everything's fine? So Hibble, I'll start with you.
I think we weren't going to do it. I don't know if I ever had that full clarity moment. I mean, I feel like with our group of guys, I've been in that moment before, and this was not that team that you could give up hope, any form of hope on, because they have the firepower. And were there long conversations in my head about what was getting ready to happen? Absolutely. I mean, I'll be very transparent there. But, I mean, I thought it was all about our start in the final round. And again, I'll go back to, we got off to a good start. And if you do that, then you're kind of pressuring the golf course instead of the golf course pressuring, you know, you and guys playing from under par versus over par. And the psychology behind that, it's huge on a championship level type golf course where birdies can be hard on some of the harder holes, but they know that there's opportunities, you know, with some easier holes. The minute they got off to a good start, I'm like, all right, we're off and running. And so I felt good about that. Now, when it comes to actually sealing the deal, I didn't feel good until the last putt went in the hole. But that's the way it is for regionals for me every single year. We've won a regional championship by 22 shots, and I still, you know, it's the completion. It's like the journey. The journey is such a long, arduous process at regionals, and the build up, and you're coming off of conference, so yeah. Until that putt goes in, you just, you know, my thoughts are at ease, and I can tell you, I got a little teary eyed on 18 though, when John was. He had his eagle putt, and really just kind of came over me. I just didn't want that group to miss out. I just didn't want them to not have a potential moment next week. So that's what I'm thankful for. It's not about us or as a staff or anything. It's purely about these guys. I just didn't want them to miss out because we've been there. We've done it. We understand what it means to be fighting for one of these big trophies right here, and I want these guys to have that opportunity, because I think that they're good enough, number one, but they've also worked hard, and that's what you want for your guys is for them to be rewarded for their hard work. So,
two moments, Bill.
Yeah. So the night before, you know, we just honestly we did not play good the first 2 days. So we're sitting in ninth, and I'm texting with Quade, and you know, we're actually, our rooms are next to each other, but we're texting back and forth, and he sends me a text, and it simply says, you know, this is not how it ends. And so I was like, yeah, I feel pretty good about him. So you know, if we can get the other guys on board like that and feel that confident, then I thought we'd be in good shape. But no, I mean, you do have little doubts kind of throughout the week, especially when you're watching guys do things that they normally don't do. They do typically we do a great job of doing the little things right, but man, we just weren't doing that early on. But you never feel great until the final putt's in, obviously. But you know, Reban was coming down the stretch. He was playing really well. Unfortunately, he had a 3-putt bogey on 15, misses a 6-footer for birdie on 16, another 3-putt on 17, but he's in great spirits on 18 fairway. And I'm walking down. It's the first time I see him. I know what he's done previously, but man, he is in a really good frame of mind coming up 18 and hits a great shot on right where JB hit it too, about 35 feet right up underneath it, and he 2-putts that. And so I kind of at that point we had. JB, I think we were at 13 under, JB on 17, which I knew he was in a good spot. I didn't know he was going to 3-putt, but he was in a good spot. And so at that moment, when Reban made that 4-footer to kind of get us to 13, I could kind of breathe a little bit. And then obviously when JB hits a really good first putt to about foot and a half, mm-hmm. just tap in for birdie, that's when you're kind of like, You can breathe, you feel good, and time to celebrate.
Okay,
so I was sitting on the green and I see all the guys sitting up there congratulating each other, high-fiving, hugging, and you want to talk about a big-time moment, just watching the guys, big sigh of almost relief. You know, you could feel that from them, that we know that we weren't supposed to be in this position, but this is golf and this is athletics. And you better bring it or you're going to get beat. But the fact that they were able to accomplish that goal, it was huge. Just watching them, you know, do a little mini celebration up there was really cool.
So I believe this is JB's first national championship, yeah, no?
It is.
So how big is that moment? I mean, he is on and two on 18, like absolutely crushing it. And now he gets to go to a national championship for the first time as a transfer for OU.
Well, I think, you know, more importantly is you don't – as much as he would have enjoyed going to the national championship by himself as an individual, if that opportunity, you know, were there for him, I think he would somewhat enjoy that. But you want your boys to be there. You want your team. The national championship, it would be great to win the national championship as an individual. Don't get me wrong. But it's a team event. And it is so much more powerful when you have a group of guys all working towards the same goal. And so anyway, he played phenomenal all week, and to have to give him a lot of credit because, you know, it kind of reminds me a little bit of our very first championship we made back in 2011 at Virginia Tech, and Abe Anser won the regional championship there and really toted us that week in order for us to make it to Carson Creek, which is where the championship was, and that this week kind of reminded me a little bit of that as they all came together on that final round. But Big John's play really helped pull us through on the front end, or otherwise we would have been in a really bad spot.
Yeah.
But that's why it's a team sport, and everybody has to step up. We can talk about Ben Lorenz's 200 par in the final round. I mean, everybody did their part, and you know, that's why it's a great team sport.
Okay, final thoughts. One key from the both of you to find success in Scottsdale. Bill, I'll start with you.
Well, you got to keep the ball in play, obviously. Desert golf. We know the rough's going to be juicy, and you got to be able to control the golf ball going into these green complexes at Greyhawk. But you know, we have an older squad, a veteran squad, who I know wants it more than anybody. I mean, there's not a team that is going to be more prepared, and it's going to come down to execution. This week we saw a little lack of execution coming out of the stretch. We saw our guys do a great job on 18, and you hope that just carries over, and that they just keep the ball in play and just hit the shots that they need to hit when they need to hit them.
I would say we've been out to Greyhawk a couple times now, and I think fairways and greens. I think the team that actually can hit fair. I mean, it's not a very long golf course, but I think the way the golf course is going to get set up, it's still going to all be about giving yourself as many opportunities as possible. And I think Greyhawk can get tricky in some spots that people can maybe underestimate it just a smidge. We'll see once we get there. But I think the teams that can hit as many fairways and more greens than everybody else are going to be in a very good spot.
All right, thanks to Meg. Thanks to you for listening to the Sooner Sports Podcast. Make sure to subscribe if you go through, I guess it would be, what, Apple Podcast, if you consume how I consume podcasts. Please leave a 5-star review, and a positive rating would be nice. We've got a big summer plan for the podcast coming up. We're going to try to get some more of the classic games. I've been digging through the library to find the older games. We'll see if we can make that happen. And as always, we appreciate you spreading the word. Thanks to Aaron Miller. Thanks to Ryan Hibble. Thanks to Bill Alcorn. Thanks to Meg McDonald. We'll talk to you guys tomorrow with Toby Rowland and a Big 12 baseball preview right here on the Sooner Sports Podcast. Boomer Sooner, everybody.
This has been the Sooner Sports Podcast. The Sooner Sports Podcast is presented by Riverwind, home to a luxury hotel, fine dining, and never-ending rewards. Riverwind is still the one. And Allstate, don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review however you listen. The preceding has been a Learfield IMG College presentation of the Sooner Sports Network.
Let's jump into Peppa's world of play. Look for spring flowers, hunt for muddy puddles, and bravely explore exciting places with Peppa play sets. Peppa Pig, inspiring kid confidence.